whenever that was that we were going to cover two topics today, Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, and where there really isn't any great danger to the chola. They're uncomfortable, but they'll survive it, and they're not in massive pain. And then my thought was that after that we would do a quiz. At the same time, I don't know if people's heads are in a quiz, and I don't want to put this on people. At the same time, I don't want to wait with it till next week, because then you have to like go through that. And honestly, with the time frame that they're talking about for this, it's not as though I can expect Monday to be a whole lot easier. So I think what I'm going to do, I'll offer it as an optional quiz. I'll send out the Google Form link. Those who are not feeling up to taking it, so you don't take it. I don't want people taking it at a later date. That's not a thing. If you want to take it today, take it today. If you don't want to take it, then that's fine. It's not going to cost you in your ultimate grade. I look at the quizzes much more as a way for you to be able to make sure you understood what was going on than, for the sake of the grade. I have a pretty solid sense at this point of where people are holding in terms of their comprehension of what's going on. I don't need the added mark in the canvas thing. Does that make sense? If it doesn't make sense, say so. Don't be shy. Everyone here is really shy. Okay, fine. Then let's get started. Everyone has the sheet. It's the one that says medical treatment on Shabbat, number 8. Saving Lives, part 4. Everyone online has it also. I didn't look to see if anybody there was not okay with the quiz format. No, we're good? Okay. All right, so we've talked about Chole She'yesh Bo Sakana, somebody who is dangerously ill. We've talked about Sakanas Eiver, right? The person who has a body part that is potentially going to be rendered non-functional, right? We had a lot of discussion about what exactly that means, which part of the body, non-functional, fine. And we talked about Safek Pikuach Nefesh, this very broad category where we don't know if we're saving lives, either because we don't know the level of risk that the person is at, we don't know if their life is in danger, it might be in danger, or because we don't know whether our treatment is actually effective. So we're working our way down, and now we get to Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, literally somebody who is ill, but is not in danger. As we just said in the introduction, this doesn't mean everybody who's not in danger. There are people who are dramatically, ill. It's just that we know they're going to survive. That person is Chole She'ein Bo Sakana. That's the category we mean. We do not mean somebody who has a little bit of a headache. That's going to be the later category. Clear? Chole She'ein Bo Sakana is somebody who is not well in a serious way, but they will live. So the first case that we're going to see involving that is Gemara in Shabbos in source number 1. It's talking about a woman who gave birth more than a week ago, but less than 30 days ago. So, yes, she's not well, but again, assuming no other complicating factors. If there are complicating factors, then it is a pikuach nefesh situation, then it is a life and death situation. But assuming no complicating factors, she's ill, but she's safe. So if you take a look at source number 1, the Gemara says, Shloshim, within 30 days, meaning after the 7 days, but within the 30, Afilu Amra Tzricha Ani, even if she says, I need some violation of Shabbos, Ein Mechalin Aleasa Shabbos, we would not violate Shabbos for her directly, Aval Osin Al Yedei Aramoi, but we would have a non-Jew do it, literally Aramoi, Aramean, but we don't mean Arameans. Arameans have been gone for a while. But we mean somebody who isn't Jewish should do it for her. So we would ask somebody who isn't Jewish to take care of whatever it was that this woman needed. Kidder of Ula Breid Rabbi Eloi, like with Ula Breid Rabbi Eloi, said to Omar, because he said, Kol Tzorchei Chole Nasin Al Yedei Aramoi B'Shabbos, not just this woman who gave birth, but any case of a chole, have a non-Jew do it on Shabbos. Uchad Rav Hamnuna, like Rav Hamnuna said, Dam Rav Hamnuna, he said, Davar She'ein Bo Sakana, if there's no danger, Omer Lanach Riviosa. So you tell a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is the one who is the one who does it. So I had a case. I only found out about it after the fact, but in a woman in her 80s told me that she had been on a tour. This happened late summer, early fall. She had been on a tour in Iceland, and she became ill. It turned out to be COVID. And it was Friday night, and she's in a hotel, and she's trying to get back to her room, and she's really not feeling well. And she didn't know, could she push the elevator button, or, you know, would she be, unable, did she have to force herself to get up the stairs? Again, she didn't know it was COVID. She just knew that she really wasn't feeling well. So the answer from this Gemara is, ideally, if you have a non-Jew, that's who should be doing it. This is somebody who's more than mildly ill, but they don't know of any danger. Yeah, Rena. That's a really good question. When you get the non-Jew to help you, how do you get the non-Jew to help you? So that's going to be the next. So once we get through the categories of illness, we're going to talk about some of the mitigations that we do. We'll talk about asking a non-Jew and how you do it. We'll talk about shinui as well and what constitutes a shinui. So I want to hold off on that right now. Just say very broadly, it's always better to hint if possible, but there are numerous cases where we say, if that's not doable, just tell them directly. So I'll get more specific when we get there. Fair? I just don't want to get sidetracked into that. So this is the basis for saying not only a woman who gave birth, but in general we'll say that that you use a non-Jew to do it. What do we mean when we say chol she'en bo sakana? Can you give me a definition? I've already been trying to give you a definition of somebody who is very ill, but they're safe. Take a look at source number 2, where the Rashbah gives us some help. And this is an approach taken by the Spanish commentators in general. He says, Veheve yodeya, he says, you should know, this is his commentary on that Gemara. He says, you should know, Shelo itiru dvarm halalu klal el bedavar sheyesh mimenu choli lechol gufo shel adam. He says, this is specifically where we're talking about, and I bolded it in the Hebrew and I underlined it in the English, an illness of the entire body. And he says, like the case of this woman who just gave birth during the 30 days, inami or besakanas aver echad, danger to an aver. He is including here sakanas aver, which we've talked about. V'chein, and he goes on to say, mikchol eina besof, uchla, treating an eye with kuchla. We talked about this the last class that we had before Yom Tov, this eye treatment that they used to apply. Remember, I mentioned alcohol, al kuchla, right? We had that. So so treating the eye at the end of an illness called uchla, patsuche eina, doing patsuche, which is another treatment for the eye. And then he gives you what may be the best definition. Shu nofel lemishkav, where the person is bedridden. Ochole umitzta'er mimenu, or they're ill and in pain from it. Somebody who is in real pain, they can't walk around, they can't function. That's what we're talking about. Aval choshesh, but if somebody just has some pain, v'umischazek v'alech kibari, and he's able to strengthen himself and walk around like someone who is healthy, ein matirin lo afilu shvus shel divrehem, we will not permit even a rabbinic prohibition. V'afilu ayidei goy, and even asking a non-Jew, he says, I'm not good with. We're going to come back to this case because we're not right now addressing it. Right now we're dealing with a more serious chol she'en bo sakana. We're going to come back to his words here. But and he goes on to say, we also have a decree against lest you grind ingredients against use of medicine. Similarly, in source number 3, the Ran, part of that same Spanish school, gives the criteria of nofel machmas chol yo lemishkav, somebody who has to go to bed. Okay, Ariana first, and then Kisitz first.
You're not a category of chol she'en bo sakana if you can walk or get a cup of water, but if you can't even get up from your body, then you're in the category. Like, if like you're so sick, but like you just need water and you get up to go get the water, you're not in that category.
So, right, so that's a good question. When we say bedridden, that doesn't mean literally they're unable to get out of bed. That's not. Right. It doesn't need to be that extreme in order to get to that stage. What it really means is somebody who can't interact with other people, can't leave the house, can't walk around the house, you know, in a normal way. That's really what we're talking about. Shira.
Yeah. So in the case of like the woman with the elevator.
Yeah.
If we're talking about this, then could she not go into the elevator even if like someone was already going in, like she didn't do anything to make it non-Jew?
Right. So if she If the Shabbos elevator is running, so to speak, or a non-Jew is already running it, that makes things much, much better. I mean, I don't want to get into the complexities of elevators. Maybe I shouldn't have given that case, because there are two sets of issues with elevators. One issue with elevators is sort of direct action, right? You push a button, you know, to call it to get to your floor. Sorry? So, hang on. It's a good question. And I would lump into this, although less severe, the issue of the electric eye beam that they have for safety purposes to keep the door from closing on people, which you have to break in order to go in. That's all sort of one type of issue. And then there's a second type of issue, which is the one that Rina is mentioning, which is, depending on the structure of your building, you may have indirect interaction with the elevator. So two examples of that. One is elevators, when they descend, often use your weight to pull down the elevator. They use gravity. They use your weight to actually draw it downward. And in tall buildings, tall modern buildings, I don't think this building counts, they tend to use that to actually recapture electricity. Yeah, I don't think, I'm happy the elevator has electricity here. But in general, I think I know there are elevators that are constructed to do that, so that you, with your weight, are actually generating electricity, as well as the concern that potentially, in order to give a safe ride, the elevator may weigh the people there and act accordingly in order to counteract their weight. There's some debate as to whether that's a concern. Are you considered to be doing malacha just based on your weight? I don't want to go too far afield with it. I gave a shiur on it many, many years ago. It might be on YU Torah. I'm not sure. But I think it was before I was recording. But it's a fun discussion, for sure, about like all the different ins and outs of elevator use. But in this case, the case we're talking about, this woman, she, from everything I understand about the case, needed to be on that elevator. The only question is how she's going to get there. You know, non-Jews help, automatic elevator, push the button with your knuckle, whatever. Yeah. Oh, one second. I saw Naomi first. And then, yeah.
Do you include Sakana Iver here? But
yeah. We did not. Correct. We right. I mentioned when I read it, he does push Sakana's Iver into the same category as Kol HaShem Bo Sakana, but we do differentiate. He seems to be more strict with it. Yeah, I think we had said when it came to Sakanas Eiver, the conclusion in the Shulchan Aruch was that you could do a Derabanan with a Shinui, right? That was, I'm looking back in my notes just to make sure I'm not saying it wrong. No, sorry. We said Shinui where there's no Sakanas Eiver. We said where it's Sakanas Eiver, we said you could do a Derabanan straight, right? And the Rashba at this point seems not to be comfortable for that, not to be comfortable with that, other than telling a non-Jew, which is a derabanan, but it's a different kind of derabanan. So yeah, he seems to be lumping them together, and he would be more machmir regarding Sakana Sefer. That's what it sounds like right now. No, we go with the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah.
So the beginning, until he talks like about like one who feels pain but overcomes and walks out healthy, he's just talking about asking
the Jew. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the position of the Rashba. We see it in the Ran, and the Shulchan Aruch brings it as well, as does the Rama. I brought you, and the heading I just said Rabbi Yosef Karo, but I should have also said the Rama. If you take a look in number 4, Chole Shenafa Machmas Chol Yo Lamishkav Ve'im Bo Sakana. So the Shulchan Aruch says somebody who is bedridden, but is not in danger. And then in the brackets, Haga, the Ramah's note, Oshi Yesh Lamechush, or alternatively, has an ache, Shemitzta Er V'chola Mimenu Kol Gufo, such that his whole body is ill. Shaz Aval Pi Shaholech, even though he's able to walk around, K'nofa L'mishkav Dami, he's like somebody who is bedridden. So you're getting both symptoms here. You're getting Rabbi Yosef Karo telling you bedridden, and the Rama telling you not only bedridden, but also the entire body is ill. So far, all we've said is ask a non-Jew to do a De'oraisa. We're about to see more. Okay? So, in terms of treatment, the Mishneh Brura says to us what we've already seen about asking a non-Jew to do a De'oraisa. So he says in number 5, Kol Shebarur She'ein B'Menias Oso Davar Chashash Sakana. He first gives you a disclaimer. Where you know that doing it this way, not doing the malacha yourself, is not going to endanger the person, right? That's a double negative, right? We use double negatives in halacha. It's very confusing. What he's saying, to put it in the positive terms, is where you know that it's safe to ask a non-Jew to do this, right? That asking the non-Jew is not going to, in the end, sabotage the patient's safety. So in such a case, Ava pisha mikomakom tzarech hulo, even though the patient needs whatever this is, or regil nasoslo, and it's normally done as a treatment, ein osin oso b'Shabbos ela al yedei eino Yehudi, we would not do it on Shabbos, we'd only have a non-Jew do it on Shabbos. Kedin tzarechecho l'shem bo sakana, like a patient who is not dangerously ill. So far, he's not disagreeing with anything we've said. He's in line with what we've said. But then he adds a note in a separate comment that I brought you in number 6. Do you remember the Shulchan Aruch brought the different views about what you do for Chol Hashem Bo Sakana and we said we follow the third view? Right? We talked about somebody who is in this category, who's not Sakonas Aver, and he brought you the four views. And the third view was the one that we sided with. That was the view that said, for a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, we are willing to do a... go back to my notes just to make sure I say it correctly. We are able to do a malacha with a shinui. So here he says the following. Mishabur writes, Hainu shemutar lasos afilu kol hashvusim v'raka yedei shinui. You're not limited. For a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, we're not talking about Sakana's Aver now. We're talking about a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana. We are not limited to just asking a non-Jew to do a de'oraisa. You could also do a derabanan with a shinui. That was the third view that was brought in the Shulchan Aruch. You could do a derabanan, just do it in an unusual way. Clear? Everyone follows that? You could do a derabanan, just do it in an unusual way. Imu choli kol aguf, if he is, you know, his whole body is ill, vembo sakanas aver, there's no danger to a neighbor. So now we add here that you can do a derabanan with a shinui. So, you know, pushing the button for the elevator, to go back to our elevator case. I think this person actually listens to the recordings of this shiur. I hope that's okay. But you don't have a non-Jew around in the hotel. What do you do? So, almost all poskim would tell you that pushing the button for the elevator is a derabanan. It's not a de'oraisa. Rav Asher Weiss would disagree. Rav Asher Weiss has a view regarding malacha on Shabbos that takes use of electricity in ways that actually change something in a visible way as a de'oraisa, as a biblical prohibition. And the truth is, his logic is compelling. Nonetheless, poskim tend not to side with him. They tend to view it as a derabanan. So since derabanan, she could push the button for the elevator with, I'm giving you an example of a shinui, with her knuckle instead of pushing it directly. Clear? What if you can't use a shinui? What if you're just, you know, you don't believe that a knuckle counts as a shinui? We'll talk about that. Whatever it is, then what do you do? So you take a look at source number 7. One more comment from the Mishneh Brura. He says, Al yidei Yisrael mutter davka al yidei shinui. He's still talking about our case. Via a Jew is allowed only if you have a shinui, in an altered way. Ach, but he says, Hachaye Adam Masik Sham, the Chaye Adam concludes in his discussion, De'im i'efshir b'shinui mutter shalo b'shinui, that if a shinui isn't an option, then do it without a shinui. We would override the derabanan for the sake of the Chol Hashein Bo Sakana. You look confused.
Why would that not be an option?
Right. So what's the logic in allowing me to do this without a shinui? I believe the logic is because, as a general rule, we say that derabanans do not apply in a case of great pain. Even though we do apply it regarding medicine, like we talked about, because that's a decree that was made specifically for those cases. We're going to come back to that eventually. But as a general principle, derabanans are not made for makom tzar, for a case of great pain. And I think that's the logic here in saying, we really, really want you to do it with a shinui. We really, really want you to do daraisas by asking a non-Jew. That's not available. Derabanan with a shinui. That's not available. Derabanan yourself. Yeah.
So what about the derabanan that are connected to a deraisa?
Right. So even a derabanan that's connected to a deraisa, he seems to be including. Yeah. That's why we said better to ask a non-Jew, where it's a derabanan that's not connected to a deraisa. We prefer that. And even though the malacha that's going to be done is actually a deraisa, that would be our preference. But where that's not an option, then we go this route.
You may have just said this, but should you do a derabanan like through a non-Jew, even if it's not connected to a derabanan?
So if you have that option and it's not going to diminish the care of the patient, go for it. Uh-huh. If that can work, sure. It is definitely a reduction in the severity of what's being done. Yeah.
Is this the category that all kids fall into?
Good. That takes us to our next point. Well, actually, not our next point. Our next point. So hang in there. But we are going there. I just wanted to give a couple of examples first, and then we're going there. So one example of this kind of condition is seen in the Aruch HaShulchan. Do you guys know who the Aruch HaShulchan was? Is that familiar? I got a couple of nods, yes. Definite shake of the head, no. Okay, so a little bit of context, just, you know, because I throw out a lot of names, and sometimes I explain them and sometimes I don't. It's probably confusing. The Mishneh Brura was the Rav in Radin in Poland at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th. He passed away in, I think, 1933, so 33 or 35. So that's the Chafetz Chaim, best known either as the Chafetz Chaim or as the Mishneh Brura. He writes this monumental work on the Orach Chaim section of Shulchan Aruch, deals with daily life, Shabbos, Yom Tov, davening, things like that. At the same time, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein is the rabbi in Novardok, in Lithuania. Eastern Europe, for those who have no idea what a Lithuania is. But Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein was not only the rav in Novardok, which was a fascinating community with a blend of a lot of different things going on at that time in history, but he also was one of the premier halachic authorities of the last 150 years. And he wrote a set of books, called the Aruch HaShulchan, on almost the entire Shulchan Aruch. On each part of the Shulchan Aruch, we don't have the Aruch HaShulchan on every single siman in Shulchan Aruch, for reasons beyond the scope of this discussion. But in the Aruch HaShulchan, he does what the Mishneh Brura does not. Meaning, the goal of the Mishneh Brura seems to be, and a lot's been written on this, and I'm just kind of oversimplifying, but the goal of Mishneh Brura seems to be to update the Shulchan Aruch for you. Because the Shulchan Aruch is written in the 16th century, and there have been a lot of rabbis since then who have written a lot of books. Whether you're talking about the famous commentaries on it, the Magen Avraham, the Shach, the Taz, Prima Gadim, or whether you're talking about standalone volumes, Chaye Adam as an example, there's a lot that's been written to deal with modern situations. There's a lot that's been written that deals with views that oppose the view of the Shulchan Aruch. And what the Mishneh Brura wants to do is bring you all of those views and tell you, so here's what I think you should do. Which, you know, can be a little confusing, but that's what the Mishneh Brura is doing. The Aruch HaShulchan goes the other way. The Aruch HaShulchan reverse engineers the Shulchan Aruch. By which I mean, the Shulchan Aruch gives you a conclusion. The Aruch HaShulchan says, let me explain where this comes from. Here's the Gemara. Here are the Rishonim. Here's the Rambam. Here's the Rashba. Here's all the different views in the Rishonim. And this is how the Shulchan Aruch got where he was going. And sometimes he will also update it with later stuff as well. He doesn't stop there. But he gives you much, much more background. It's obviously a harder book to learn because he's giving you way more background on it. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who favor the Aruch HaShulchan over the Mishneh Brura First, because he gives you more background. Like, you know why he's getting to this conclusion and where it's going. And because he was the Rav of a shul. As opposed to the Chafetz Chaim, who's a Rosh Yeshiva, he's the Rav of a shul, and you deal with a different population when you're the Rav of a shul. You deal with different needs. And so some are more sympathetic to the Aruch HaShulchan as somebody whose words will resonate. The disagreements between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishneh Berurah are not like all over the place. It's not like every section has a disagreement. But they do disagree on certain things, and it's worth familiarity with the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay. So knowing that, in source number 8, for those who do want to learn the Aruch HaShulchan, by the way, there is an English translation of part of Hilchos Shabbos from the Aruch HaShulchan that was published, I think, 2 years ago. A year or two ago, and it's available. Okay, so the Aruch HaShulchan is talking about this Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana, and look what he says in number 8. I'm going to read out my English translation here. He says, one who has a mere ache of the head or intestines or heart or the like, a headache, stomach ache, heart's bothering him, he doesn't mean like a heart attack, that's not where he is. And he galvanizes himself and walks as a healthy person. Like people who are weak due to aches, who have a cough or the like, and they walk and travel and conduct their business, they do whatever they want to do. He's not considered ill at all. One may not treat him, even via a non-Jew, due to the concern for grinding ingredients. That's what the Rashba had said at the end of his comment. But one who has an ache which weakens his whole body, and even though he strengthens himself and walks, his walking is heavy and weak, his law is like one who is bedridden. To be a person who is ill and not endangered. So he says, that's what we're talking about for Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana, the one who can't walk around, who can't interact. Clear?
What was the second part of that?
The one who's walking is, who strains himself and walks at his walking. Right, so the one who's not able to walk is bedridden. But also somebody who can, yes, he can force himself to get out of bed, to go to the kitchen and get water or whatever it is, but that's not, like, you look at that person and you know. You know, this isn't good. Yeah. So that's a case. Another is from Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham in source number 9. Have I explained who he is? Have I given any introduction to him? Okay, if not, that's criminal, so I have to. Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham is one of the premier authorities on medical halacha in our day. He lives in Israel. He was, for decades, the head of internal medicine at Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, so obviously a doctor. He also asked all the questions that came his way on medical halacha to the big names of the last few decades in Israel. So he asked Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he asked Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, he asked Rabbi Yashiv, like all the big names that you've heard of, he was in touch with directly, asking practical questions. And then he composed a multi-volume work on the Shulchan Aruch called the Nishmas Avram, in which he goes through the Shulchan Aruch and he brings you the questions that he asked and their answers. It's phenomenal. I'm actually going to be giving a Monday night series on it online starting the 30th. But it's available actually in translation also. And I don't know the quality of the translation. I haven't read it. But the Nishmas Avram, for those who want to know more about medical halacha, like he's the one to go to. And bonus, he answers email. So, like, I've you know, sent him questions about stuff in the Nishmas Avram, and he answers, which is very cool. Okay, so that's somebody to know of. So he, on Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana, says the following. One who has a fever, which would normally keep him from leaving the house due to the illness, even if he is not bedridden. He's giving you cases. So he says, somebody who has a fever, which, under normal circumstances, they would say, stay home. Not bedridden necessarily, but he has a fever enough that he should not be going out. Not because of fear of infecting others, but because of their own condition. One who suffers from strong pain and not from an internal aver, because he wants to avoid the discussion about where it's internal and you don't know, and suffix, sakana, to the point that his whole body is weak. One who walks as though healthy and is not even bedridden, but he will fall into bed if he does not receive treatment on time, like one who suffers from migraines. Right? He gives migraines as an example of it, even when, I don't know if anybody here deals with migraines, but those who do are aware that there are warning signs that it's developing. He says at the point where you're already in the warning stage, you're already able to act and call it Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana. Yeah, Rina.
Can you explain what
Yes, that's my.
It's, but that could be for anything. So wouldn't that be in a different category?
Right, so because the illness that he's talking about is at the level of Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, he's using it as an example. But you are correct. If somebody knew, if the allergy would reduce you to being a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana.
Oh, also.
Yeah.
If,
so,
you know, if you have a headache that you know is going to get, like not a migraine, a headache that you know is going to get worse, but you know it won't get worse enough to be a Chol HaShem, then you can't take
correct.
It.
Correct. Correct. Now, I want to be careful here. I'm not talking about the case where a person would end up after Shabbos as a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, because that's an issue we have to discuss still. Like, what about future danger? You know, what am I allowed to do on Shabbos to avoid a problem in the future? That's a whole other piece of this. I think somebody had actually asked about it a while back. It might have been Ruthie. I don't remember. Maybe you did. Take credit. I'm not sure, but someone definitely asked that question sitting in that part of the room. Julie.
So this source is saying that we can, that these people can ask a non-Jew to do it for them?
Correct. And even a de'oraisa. Even asking a non-Jew to do something that's biblically prohibited.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, let's give a practical case, okay? You have somebody who has a terrible fever and they don't have medication for it at home. So they would be allowed to knock on the apartment next door, get the non-Jew's attention and explain their problem, and the non-Jew can drive to the store, which, you know, we treat as a de'oraisa, and get them medication. That would be okay. Yeah.
Have you explained any, like, differentiation between de'oraisa and de'rabbanan in this case? Because I haven't heard anything. You've been saying, like, it's all the same.
Well, I said that you mean regarding asking a non-Jew?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can ask a non-Jew to do even a de'oraisa. So certainly you could ask the non-Jew to do a de'rabbanan.
And in any of these cases that it's okay to ask?
Any of the cases that we've defined as Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, yeah. The fever, the bedridden, yeah.
You can ask for de'oraisa for that?
Correct. And, you know, as I answered before, it would be better to hint. But that does not seem to be, we'll discuss it more, but it does not seem to be a formal requirement. So let's talk about the case of kids, right? And this whole discussion about the quiz is moot because we're not getting there anyway. Okay. But the case of children. So we've already learned that children automatically qualify as Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, right? We made that statement. It was a Ramah that we talked about. Actually, did I bring it or not bring it on the sheet? Because I wanted to. Oh, you know what I did? That's funny. Okay, I didn't bring it as the Ramah. If you take a look at source number 10, I meant to bring the Ramah. I brought the Aruch HaShulchan instead, which was a mistake, but I did, so it's there. But it's the mistake. It says 328.17. It should say 328.20. 328.17 is where the Ramah would have been. I'm sorry about that. Why did I? Oh, you know what? Yeah, no, I see why I made the mistake. It's because I thought I had brought more in number 4 than I actually did. It's moot. Don't worry about it. We're fine. But this is what the Ramah says. The Ramah writes that children qualify automatically for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, and therefore you are allowed to ask somebody who isn't Jewish to cook food for them on Shabbos. They could make food, they could make food and cooking. I don't want to get into the Bishul Akum. That's a whole other discussion. You could ask them to make food for a minor who has no food. They're not ill. They're just kids. Automatically, the needs of a minor are treated like Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. But what constitutes a minor? Obviously, we don't mean under 18. But what do we mean? How do you know? So this is a major debate as to what age actually counts here. So we're gonna see four views. But it's really two different views, and then one of them has subcategories. Yeah.
Can this apply when you're keeping women in Israel for Sukkot and you're keeping 2 days on the second day? Could you ask a Jewish person who's Israeli and doesn't keep that day to do things for you that
So that's a whole great discussion that I'm not going anywhere near right now. It's a good question. It's just not the topic right now. This is now way too late for me to ask this question for those online, but are you able to hear the questions people are asking?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, I got a yes, a sort of, and a somewhat. Okay. I've repeated some of them, I hope. Okay. So the two categories of approaches here are to say either we're talking about a kid who has a special diet. And then we're going to discuss different views as to what age that means. But it's fundamentally about a special diet, which makes sense because the Shulchan Aruch, when he talks about this, or the Ramah, when he talks about what you can do for kids as a Cholesh Yembo Sakana, his emphasis is food. He talks about the non-Jew making food for them. So it's got to be a kid who is young enough that they have special dietary needs. That's one way to look at it. And again, we're going to break this down and talk about the different explanations for that. The other view is no, it's kids who are dependent on adults in general, who can't fend for themselves. Not about food per se, but life. Now, you could say, I know, it can include college students, I get it. But let's go through the different perspectives. Yeah. She'ein bo sakana, correct. So, under the special diet category, Rabbi Achiel Michal Epstein, who we quoted, the Aruch HaShulchan, in source number 10, which again should say 20, not 17, whatever, takes the view that it's as long as the child eats baby food.
Wait, what source is this?
This is number 10. He says, "Tinok she'eino yachol adayin le'achol kechol anashim," an infant who cannot eat as normal people do, right? Dino k'tin chol hashem bo sakana. So that's the status of a person who is ill, who's not in danger, and therefore you could tell a non-Jew to cook for him when needed. One may directly feed him muktzah items when needed, which is its own discussion. That's about using a derabanan. But the point is that the Aruch HaShulchan says it's about having to eat baby food. I don't mean literally baby food out of a jar. But what we mean is they don't eat what adults eat. So you're talking about a very young kid. Clearly based on the idea that our whole source for this is about preparing food for them. Right? So that's why. That's one view. The Chazon Ish and of Shlomo Zalman Orbach are reported to have said, well, Chazon Ish wrote it, the Shlomo Zalman, in a personal communication to the Nishmas Avram, said it's 2 or 3 years old. That's what we're talking about. Based on what? So if you take a look at source number 11, this is a comment of Tosvos on a Gemara in Shabbos. The context of that Gemara is that we have a discussion about whether a child is allowed to nurse from an animal on Shabbos. I don't want to get into the whole nursing on Shabbos discussion. It's a fascinating one. But the question is a child allowed to nurse from an animal on Shabbos? And the Gemara says yes, because it's dangerous to be without milk. The child needs to have access to milk. So Tosfos brings this up in terms of the responsibility of adults to keep children from doing something they're not allowed to do, and whether you have to stop the child from doing it. And that's what I brought you in source number 11. But recognizing we're going to run out of time, I'm not going to read through the entire source. I want to get to the highlight, which is at the end, where he says the child's need for milk is the age of 2 or 3. Right? If you think about the fact that biblical weaning, when it talks about in the Torah, the idea that somebody was weaned, they stopped nursing, so that tends to be assigned to the age of 2 or 3. So the assumption is that's when they need it, and therefore when the Ramah talks about cooking food for them on Shabbos, having a non-Jew cook for them on Shabbos, the assumption is it means 2 or 3. Yeah?
What's
Just an understanding of biology of their day. That's really it. Like, it wasn't like yet a pasuk that they took and said, well, two or three must be the age when they know. It's they look at the kids and say, well, we think they need that till the age of two or three. And yes, that means it could change. Right, so no, nothing to do with that issue. Everything to do with when they are said to be in danger if they don't have access to milk. Yeah, that's what it's about. The whole discussion about my responsibility to keep them from sinning is just the context in which Tosfos makes the comment, which is then brought by the Chazon Ish, which is brought by the Nishma Sofra. Are we clear? I think it's very similar to the Aruch HaShulchan about the kid needing a special diet. They need something that is not necessarily readily available, but also the fact that Tosfos makes the comment about the kid needing it and being allowed to nurse for it on Shabbos. So that tells you, oh, we're willing to override certain concerns in order to be able to feed them.
Is that their
reason? Probably not. I didn't want to get into the whole nursing conversation. Rav Yitzchak Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak, in source number 12, also a contemporary halachic authority, he actually was the posek for Shaarei Tzedek Hospital in the end of the 20th century. Rav Eliezer Waldenberg also answered many questions for the doctors there, but Rav Yitzchak Weiss was the actual posek. So he has another source to try to give an age. He says, when do we allow a child to eat on Yom Kippur? That should be our standard for whether the kid really needs food. So if you take a look at source number 12, he says, I think we don't let kids fast when they're under the age of 9. So therefore, he says, the kid is a cholesh embo sakana until the age of 9. Now, he's talking specifically about the issue of a non-Jew preparing food for a child on Shabbos. But the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, a very important guide to the laws of Shabbos, says 9 or 10 overall, beyond cooking food. And he uses this as his basis. So I'm just going to give you the last view and then sum it up. The last view is brought by Rav Yaakov Emden, based on a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma talks about a case in which there's a child who's locked into a room. And you can't unlock the door. The kid isn't able to unlock the door. And the Gemara actually says you break down the door and get the kid out of the room. Even though there's no physical danger, it's the trauma of the kid being locked into the room is sufficient to warrant that we break down the door. So Rav Yaakov Emden quotes that, and he says in source number 14, that's as long as the child needs his mother, which we assume to be to the age of 6, and he talks about an issue in the laws of Tchum that I'm not getting into that proves that a child is considered to be dependent on the mother until the age of 6. And he says, but if you know the kid is going to be traumatized and he's older than 6, you also break down the door. We don't want the kid to be traumatized, and you say, well, sorry, you're 7 years old now. But that's a different issue, is dependence versus the ones who group it with food. So because when we do get to the quiz, this is going to be a question, and because it's good to know, I wanted to make sure that we're clear on the perspectives regarding the proper age. Three of them say it's based on special diet, because that's the case of Shulchan Aruch brings, asking a non-Jew to actually prepare food for them on Shabbos. So one view is it's when kids need baby food. That's when they have special food needs. Second view says, based on Tosfos, that it's when they need milk, because we have this idea that they can nurse on Shabbos, and even nurse from an animal on Shabbos, which has its complications. Therefore, the fact that we let them do that tells me that as long as they need milk, they're justified.
What was the second view?
This is the second view.
What was the first one?
The first one was the view that it's when they have a special diet, special baby food. So the Tosfos is part of this second view, not the view of adult, depending on adults. The first three views are all under the special diet view. Yeah, I don't want to rush this and confuse people. That's a bad idea. So we're going to come back to this, God willing, the beginning next time on Monday, and walk through it and try to make sure that it's clear.
Yeah.
All right? Okay. The third view is the view that says that it's when they are allowed, not allowed, when they don't let them fast on Yom Kippur. That shows that they are in need of food. That falls under special diet also. And then you have the fourth view, which is different altogether, which says, no, it's about being dependent on a parent, as seen in the discussion about the kid who's locked in the room. Yeah,
so Ariana. Like,
these are all when a child is considered chola she'ein bo sakana. Yeah. All right. Okay. Stay safe.